Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, September 7th, 2010. Tech News Today is brought to you by Mac Break Weekly. Take a break from your Mac and enjoy hearing Andy and Leo gossip about it. Tuesdays at 11 Pacific, 2 Eastern on live.twit.tv. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt. Behind the boards, our excellent producer, Eric Lanigan.
Hey, guys. How are you?
I'm good. How's it going?
Good.
Joining us to talk some tech today is Iyaz Akhtar right here in the studio.
In the studio. Like, I can actually cross the plane.
Wow.
Look at that.
You can break the third wall.
That's true. And I probably will freeze. It just won't be Skype's fault this time.
Yeah?
That's right.
Is your you think your audio will be good?
I think my audio is going to be fantastic. One great time, I think, you know?
Oh, you know what? It's not Skype. It's you.
Oh.
Yeah, you need to do something about that. Also joining us is John Strickland from HowStuffWorks.com and the Tech Stuff podcast in particular. Hey, John.
Howdy, y'all.
It's good to see you.
It's good to hear you, too.
Yes, thanks. It's good to be seen and heard.
It's what's so weird is that I spent the weekend with John.
At Dragon Con, the
conference that we covered down in Atlanta, Georgia.
I
got to see you in person all weekend, but then when I have you on the show, we're back to Skype.
Yeah, funny how that works.
It is
next
funny.
Next time we'll host you and we'll have a special joint presentation here in Atlanta.
And I should mention, I was very happy to be on the Tech Stuff podcast. We recorded it this weekend, and that should be coming out pretty soon, right?
Yeah, that'll be coming up in a couple of weeks. We actually have scheduled out our episodes so that we can give our audio people time to clean anything up that needs to be fixed.
And
So it should be going up. I think right now we have it scheduled for the 22nd, but that can change.
All right. Well, let's start off with a big IFA keynote address, IFA, IFA, big tech fair in Berlin. By the way, unlike CES, the public is welcome at IFA. You can just buy a ticket and show up. It's open to all comers. And Eric Schmidt gave the big keynote address, the closing keynote address, and talked a lot about Google TV and said it's going to be ready in this fall.
He also said it's going to ruin your evening.
Why did he say that?
He was talking about how because Google TV is supposed to allow you to do all this kind of searching stuff, you're going to be checking out everything all night. You're going to end up, pretty much wasting your entire evening looking up stuff on Google TV. I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing to say as a quote. You know, it'll ruin your evening. I can't wait to see that on the Logitech box.
Because you're just going to have so much awesome.
Yeah.
It will kill you.
It'll probably be in beta for 5 years anyway, so.
Yeah, right. Well, if they followed the normal Google way of doing things. It said it's going to launch on a Sony HDTV, a Sony Blu-ray player, and a Logitech set-top box to start. And that's just in the U.S. They did say that it would be going global next year, though.
Do they have any big partners lined up? Or, I mean, just YouTube stuff? Or what are we going to get from Google TV?
Yeah, I haven't seen any content partners specifically. Obviously, YouTube will be on there because it's part of Google. And then the web will be on there. So, theoretically, they could put Hulu on there. But remember, when Boxy tried to do that, because Hulu was freely available on the web, Hulu got their knickers in a twist and started this, escalating war of blocking Hulu video from the Boxy browser, which was just a Firefox browser.
To be fair, though, Boxy is not Google.
That is actually unfair, but a fair point.
Yeah, but that means that Hulu is going to try to get money out of Google instead of it just going, we're going to block you right now.
Yeah.
Probably just going to charge a ton of money for that.
Anyway, he did show off a demonstration that you can find if you search around on YouTube. They've got it there. And he talked a little bit about search. He talked a little bit about the fact that, you know, Google is constantly innovating. They've got an announcement tomorrow about search because he talked about how he wants to make search fast. He wants to guess what you're going to search in next. He made this kind of offhand remarks about when you're walking down the street and you've got your phone in your pocket, it should be like automatically ready to search for something that's nearby you, like a restaurant or something like that, so that when you pick out your phone, it already has results ready for you.
That sounds a little creepy, actually.
Sounds like a battery drain.
Couldn't you just look around, too? I mean, what do you want to... do nearby? Well, just turn your head and go, oh.
I do like the idea, though, if I pulled it out and was like, restaurant, it would know what restaurants are around me.
Oh, yeah, but that seems like that would be a location-based thing that would have to be built into like a lot of Google phones, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
Well, getting back to Google TV, what I'm really curious to see is if they've made the interface useful enough so that you get over the fact that you're typing stuff in to your television.
Hey, Jonathan,
because I think that's a huge barrier.
Jonathan, do you think that seeing the Google TV on the actual box on the TV, is that going to sell any televisions to anybody? Because, I mean, I don't think it's going to hurt sales myself, but I'm kind of curious to see if people are going to say, oh, look, Google's on a TV. I'm going to buy this one over another one.
I'm still not convinced that Google on a phone sells phones. I think it's more the handsets that are selling the phones than the fact that it's Android. Except for, I mean, there's the core Android fan base, and they're going to purchase an Android phone because it's Android. But beyond that, when you get to the more broad consumer base, I think those folks are buying a phone based upon what the hardware looks like and, you know, the feeling they get for an in-store demo. So I agree with you, Ayaz. I don't think that the name is necessarily going to be the huge contributor to sales.
Custom remote control hardware is being worked on right now with Sony and Logitech. And what about the idea of using an Android phone as your remote control?
That seems very doable now, at least.
Seems easy, yeah.
And then it'll be able to talk to each other. But, I mean, if anything, the best thing about this is we'll probably have a lot of QWERTY keyboards on remote control. So you're not like doing that horrible directional pad dance, which I hate when you have to put in a Wi-Fi code or something.
Well,
like that.
Well, the demo they did at IFA used a custom keyboard, a full QWERTY keyboard. They also say they're working on a pointing mechanism and television-specific buttons.
No. They should not be doing mouse and keyboard.
Well, if they have a keyboard at the ready, even if it's like a nice little touchscreen, I like that Vizio keyboard.
Right, that's what I'm thinking is going to be coming out with the Harmony and Logitech, especially since they're a partner. I'm imagining we're going to see some nice, really cool Harmony remotes that have keyboards built in, so we don't have to do that kind of odd things. Maybe they'll even have a kind of like a gyroscope in the Harmony remote, because that's really what I'm thinking about. In the living room, you've probably done this. You hook up a computer to a TV, and it just doesn't work well, because it's not the same 10-foot interface.
Right. No, it's all about the interface. You're right.
And also, I thought I'd also mention the Google TV premise, the idea that you would be able to get web content while you're watching a program, so you could get related web content in the future. Say that you're watching a program about cars and you want more information on the car, you can pull it up. We've seen stuff like that, attempts at stuff like that in the past that really haven't taken off. I'm not sure that Google has cracked the code to make that really accessible yet.
Yeah, but Google's like so well-known at interfaces. Wait, that's not Google. Sorry.
Well, and
eventually, I mean, they get it right.
I definitely see why they're going that way, because, I mean, how many people watch television while they also have either a tablet or a laptop open, like, right there, and they're surfing and watching kind of at the same time. I can see why they're going that way, you know, combine both of those activities into one display. I just don't know. I don't know if people are ready to do that yet.
And one of the things I found a little annoying is that Google TV is not like a DVR-based concept. It's a software solution. So it's not like you can just pause the TV unless you have a DVR attached already. Then you want to search the web. So like, I don't know if you can do dual pane viewing on one screen or how that's going to even work.
The demo I saw did have that, where the program you were watching gets reduced to like a picture-in-picture sort of thing. Mm. And the rest of the screen converts over to your web browser or whatever other function you're using.
Yeah, they demoed it with a Dish Network DVR just to sort of show off that exact situation.
I'll boldly predict that next year it's going to be decent. This year is going to be pretty rough.
All right.
Well, the early adopters will drive it.
One thing that Eric Schmidt did not talk about is the Texas Attorney General investigating whether Google is guilty of antitrust. There are a trio of companies have made the complaint. They are Foundum, MyTriggers, and Trade Comet.
They've made the same complaint before too. All three have had previous complaints with Google.
They don't like their site rankings, and they accuse Google of being anti-competitive because Google runs a search engine, but also runs other sorts of operations that compete with Foundum, MyTriggers, and Trade Comet, and so. They think that they're being unfairly deprecated by the search algorithm.
When I read this story, I kept looking for some other point, because Google can do whatever it wants on its own search engine and their own products. They promoted the Droid, I think, when that came out. They can do whatever they want. It's their own thing. So, like, I kept looking for this, like, they're supposed to have a right to this ranking, but they don't. It's just a private company.
And furthermore, Google alleges that these three companies may have ties back to Microsoft, and that Microsoft may be the driver behind all these complaints. And you know, you could easily say that Microsoft has a vested interest in taking Google down a peg or three.
Yeah, Don Harrison, the deputy general counsel for Google, posted on a blog specifically pointing out that Foundum is an organization funded largely by Microsoft. Trade Comet is using the Microsoft antitrust attorneys to represent them. And My Triggers is also represented by Microsoft's antitrust attorneys.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Microsoft could simply own these companies, have interest in them, and not even realize it at this point. They have so much money and do so many like different projects. You know that one hand doesn't talk to the other. So, I mean, if this, I'm saying that it's giving Microsoft too much credit to even think that they're doing this.
It may, well, or it may be a situation where Microsoft would normally try to stop them and say, hey, no, you can't use our attorneys for that. But this comes up, and then Microsoft's like, of course you can use our attorneys.
Yeah.
Go ahead. That's no, we're too busy to pay attention to that right now.
Yeah. Microsoft's no stranger to antitrust issues.
That's for sure.
Yeah. I think it's also interesting. I'm not really familiar with these three companies. I read up about them in preparation for the show. And it sounds to me like in some cases, at least, they may not have a leg to stand on, even if you set aside the whole First Amendment issue, saying that it's Google's First Amendment right to rank search engine results any way they want. Because it sounds like some of the sites work not dissimilar to a link dump, which don't rank well in Google anyway because they're not really relevant searches.
Are you saying there's frivolous charges against a company that might have lawsuits involved?
No, I'm not saying
they're
frivolous.
That never happens. Not in tech.
I'm saying other people say they're frivolous. I would not go so far as I am not a legal expert.
Well, and I that is the big complaint here is that Google's algorithm is an algorithm. There's not a lot of people behind it. There's a lot of people behind making the algorithm, but
sure,
tuning the algorithm to, you know, deprecate these smaller companies just wouldn't be worth it to Google.
Right.
I mean, they're working so hard on tuning the algorithm to prevent spam, prevent malware, reduce the gaming of the algorithm, and you don't see them in any way deprecating Bing. Bing search comes up all the time, or AOL search or others. So I'm not saying Google can never do any wrong, but it just doesn't make sense that this is how they would do it.
Yeah, why would they put this much effort to these small fries?
And furthermore, if they got what they wanted, if they somehow altered the way Google changed their search results, can you imagine how many other people would be upset at that result? How many companies would be up in arms that their page ranking had completely changed because of this complaint? It would be hysteria.
Yeah. We'll keep an eye on that, but I don't think this is really going to go anywhere. It seems like another example of a politician looking for some good headlines in an election year.
Yeah, throw Google out there and it'll get headlines.
I'm going after that big Google. We'll stop them pushing around these companies. Meanwhile, in Europe, some serious law enforcement going down. Sweden's Fredrik Engblad is a intellectual property prosecutor, and he made an announcement this morning at the request of Belgian authorities that they have made a series of coordinated raids, mostly in Sweden, on ISPs and universities, targeting a group called The Scene that collectively obtain, crack, and distribute software, games, and media. The idea being that they would go after the source of pirated materials rather than the ISPs or the people who trade in them. So instead of going after the grandmas and the little kids who happen to have their computer used for some sort of file sharing, instead of going after the ISPs who are really just providing a service like the mail and don't monitor everything that happens on their network, they go after the people that they have found actually are cracking the movies and putting them on the internet.
It seems a little scary at some point too, because the ISPs are complying and they're pointing out who these criminals are effectively. But
right.
But it's definitely better than just punishing a giant ISP for something they have no control over. But if you're sharing files, you might want to rethink about that.
Well,
yeah.
Go ahead, John.
I was about to say I can't really argue with the motivation to go after the people who are actually uploading the let's face it, stolen material. I have no problem with that because, I mean, these folks are breaking the law, and I don't have any issue with someone pursuing that. But yeah, the method of doing it, where you go to an ISP and put pressure on an ISP in order to get the information you need to then pursue it, that's a little more problematic, because in this instance, you can say, well, I can see where that's justified. These are people who are breaking the law. But it's really not that big a step from this instance to something where a government says, I don't like what this person is saying about me. I want to find out who they are.
Yeah, but here's what happens, right? You go and you get a subpoena. You get a court to review this and say, okay, it looks like you have probable cause. You can go to the ISP with a court order and have them hand over the IP address and any information behind that IP address for just those IP addresses at that time. That's the way it's supposed to work. It's not a fishing expedition where they just go, give us all your IP addresses and we're going to look for file shares, which the industry has asked for before. They actually caused a little bit of concern earlier in the day because they went to PRQ, which is one of the ISPs that works with the Pirate Bay. And so a lot of people thought this was actually targeting the Pirate Bay, but it's not. It's not a targeting the tracker. It's targeting the source. And according to PRQ's spokesperson, they were interested in who were using two IP addresses from 2009 and onwards. He says, we have no records of our clients, but we're handing over email addresses for those behind the IPs. It's rare that our clients have mail addresses that are traceable like that. This to me is okay. You've got a specific violation and a specific request with probable cause that is court supervised mm-hmm. on something that will then be tried in court. There's no presumption of guilt here. It's the way crimes are fought. It's you've got some evidence, you go after the information, you take it to court, you let a judge decide.
You think this model is going to be followed in the United States, or are we going to still see the random? We're just going to go ahead and say, give us all your records through everything. But yeah, this is, if you're going to do this kind of investigation, it's actually somewhat focused on the actual criminal.
And I still don't think this is actually the way that the industry can win in the marketplace.
Oh, yeah.
I think this is legal, and this is under the current system the way to go about it, probably the only way that you really should go about it, but the system still needs to change.
Well, sure, because I mean, you're going to have other people pop up in their place just as quickly as you take them down, really.
Right.
I mean, the system does need to change, and I don't have any of the answers for that. I thought it was really interesting that some people were worried that this would actually spill over to not just peer-to-peer, but because the PRQ servers also host some WikiLeaks information.
Right, I said Pirate Bay earlier, but I meant WikiLeaks.
Yeah, yeah, that it could have been a targeted attack on WikiLeaks, and according to everyone involved, that was not the intent. But I am considering the recent news that's been coming out about the whole WikiLeaks situation. I can understand why that was a concern.
All right. Craigslist over the weekend unexpectedly pulled down its adult services listings. If you haven't been keeping up on this, the attorneys general in the United States have really been putting the pressure on Craigslist. What they've done is they used to run an erotic services section. And there were several complaints, mostly from a sheriff in Cook County, Illinois, to mm-hmm. shut down the erotic services. So they started charging for the erotic services, saying, well, that would be an impediment to placing these ads, and they'd be able to trace it because they would only take payment by credit card. Then they still got pressure, so they changed it into an adult, what was it called?
Adult services.
Instead of erotic services, and they started to require approval. So not only would they charge, but they would, and then also take credit cards, but also have to take a phone call from someone where lawyers would review it. But they still got pressure, and a full-page ad was taken out in New York saying, I was taken advantage of by a group of people who operated on Craigslist. The attorneys general are all saying, this is brothel activity, and Craigslist has to shut it down. So over the weekend, Craigslist finally removed their adult services section and replaced where it used to be on their website with a word censored and the sort of classic black bar.
There's no official reason from Craigslist why they had to do this. Tom, you were mentioning earlier, you think that probably because they use that censored logo there, it's probably not because they wanted to do it. Probably just a lot of pressure. But the other thing is, it's not going to really remove the problem. Like, if people really want no listings for these kinds of things, I mean, that's impossible. It's going to end up in real estate and codes, or it's going to end up in, I don't know, other silly things.
For sale.
For sale.
It could just end up in general merchandise for sale, yeah. it could end up in for rent. Craigslist does not charge for most of their listings. In fact, their policy, I've talked to Craig Newmark about this, is to only charge when they feel like there's too much of a level of noise. And they start charging because it reduces the noise. So that's why if you want to put a job listing up, usually they charge for that because it reduces the noise. It keeps that to be just a, like real jobs rather than scams. And that's the idea behind adult services. They weren't trying to cash in on adult services so much as reduce the noise and try to get rid of the scammers. So, you know, this idea that somehow Craigslist was uniquely encouraging miscreant behavior is ludicrous.
Yeah.
Look at the back page of any free weekly newspaper in the United States, you'll see much worse advertising than what you'll see on Craigslist now because they removed that whole section.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's been an argument that a lot of people have made in the past, saying that why are you specifically targeting Craigslist when you can find these same ads in most of these markets, like you said, in any free weekly paper? Why aren't you going after those as well? And I think, you know, it's because Craigslist is a pretty big and easy target. So, I mean, it's one, again, it may well be one of those things where someone says it's an election year and this is a good, easy stance to say, look at my values because I stand against these things.
Conspiracy theory time, maybe it's the newspapers messing with them. I mean,
wait,
think about it.
No, if they have to, need that.
If you have to put credit card information for everything you put up on Craigslist, you might as well do it anywhere else. It's the same kind of model. Now, granted, it's going to have a lot more exposure on Craigslist. But I mean, Craigslist almost killed, like, I don't know how many percentages of newspaper classified listings. So it could just be
now, because there isn't an adult services section, your best opportunity is to go to some other area of Craigslist and post for free.
But I'm saying
why pay for an advertisement in a newspaper?
I'm saying then if Craigslist has to crack down, they're going to say we want a credit card. And if they have to do that for every single section, it's going to mess up
how they won't, though. I mean, that's. Yeah, the attorneys general got what they wanted, which is, hey, electorate, we stopped the prostitution threat on Craigslist.
Like removing a tag.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that story is now over. And then what they've done is make it worse.
It's just going to be hidden, and it's going to be for free. So,
Amazon has stolen Microsoft's director of game platform strategy.
Yay.
Well, they didn't really steal him. That's the headline on Gadget. I don't think they just like went and kidnapped him.
He's got a black bag over his head.
I think they just made him an offer to work at Amazon, and he took it. His name is Andre Vrignod, if I'm pronouncing it right, which I'm probably not. He started Microsoft in 2002 as director of Xbox Live platform strategy. He's been involved in Xbox Live implementation on Windows Phone 7. So why does Amazon want him?
Well, Amazon's been rumored to actually make their own hardware for other stuff, so it's probably not going to be Kindle games. Don't expect anything awesome on E-Ink, because why would that happen? Like, what, one, 2 frames a second, maybe? But I'm thinking, I would like to see Amazon have their own other hardware. Maybe I wanted to see something like, I think it was OnLive. That was the, where you can actually have a service that you're getting.
That's, I'm a subscriber to that.
That's why I'm thinking that would make sense for them to actually have a streaming service. Not, I think you were mentioning another thing, Tom.
Well, yeah, I'm going to hold mine. John, do you have a theory? Because mine's right, and I just want to trump the price.
My own theory is that Amazon's got a real uphill battle no matter what it is they pick, just because the market's got a – I mean, they're going to have to come up with something really unique to make a big impact. You've already got these – the consoles are well entrenched. You've got PC gaming that's pretty well entrenched too. And then you've got things like the Apple apps, you know, the iPhone and the iPod Touch stuff. It's already a pretty saturated market. I'm kind of curious to see what they do.
I think what they're going to do is create another area of their digital download section and add video games. Because that's what Xbox Live was. It was a marketplace for downloading video games. And
so you're thinking Steam.
Yeah, exactly. I think they'll do a version of Steam. So just like with a video, when you buy a video from Amazon, you don't even download it necessarily. You can if you want, but you just buy it and it stays up there on Amazon and you can access it from any machine. You just log into your Amazon account and it's there and you keep it forever and you don't have to download it and you don't have to worry about losing it. And you also have the Amazon Music Store, which is un-DRM'd MP3s. I think they add a third prong, which is downloadable games. They're looking at Steam and they're like, damn, we could either buy Steam or we could develop this ourselves. So they may still yet try to buy Steam, or they may just develop this on their own. And this would be the first guy to hire to do something like that.
Either way, it's going to be interesting to see what they are going to do with this, because I mean, when the idea Amazon even make its own hardware a long time ago broke, it seemed a little out there. But now that they've made the Kindle, they could do almost anything. They could do their own hardware. They could do their own service. And I'm not really sure where they're going to go with this.
I just hope if they do this Steam thing, it'll mean I can get these games on my Roku. Although I imagine playing on that little remote control will be very irritating.
No, I think they'd be PC games. Yeah, that could be kind of a pain. I mean, that might be something like that. But yeah, they could.
I mean, don't forget Xbox has its little mini games, and they have the large games too. So possible. It can be all over the place.
All right. A photovoltaic cell is an awesome thing as far as solar power, but it breaks down really quickly just by being used over time. A team at MIT has created a self-assembling and therefore self-repairing solar cell made up of a synthetic molecular sloop containing phospholipids. It works pretty much like a leaf. Leaves undergo the same problem where the sun breaks down what they're trying to do with the ability to use chlorophyll.
Chloroform
each other.
They're just, you know, suffocating each other.
Any is the time I've woken up in the middle of the woods wondering
what plant did this to me? No, chlorophyll. They actually imitate that process that a tree uses or a plant uses to keep making valid ways of taking in solar energy and turning into usable energy. So after a few hours of solar pummeling, these new cells would break down, automatically recreate themselves, and return efficiency to maximum.
Yeah, it's a really cool idea. They face some pretty big issues right now. For one, the efficiency to transfer transform the light into electricity isn't nearly as high as on the old silicon-based solar cells. So they have to make some adjustments there so that you get a good efficiency. That's always been a big problem with solar power, is that you just really couldn't generate enough electricity with solar cells unless you had tons and tons of them to really make a big impact. So once they get through that problem, this is really promising. It means that you've got a device that through normal wear and tear, you renew it and you're right back to as if it were, mint in box.
And they basically say that, current solar cells took a long time to reach the efficiency they're at now. So if you just invest in this new technology and research, you could yield a system that's highly efficient, can self-repair, and works well under low-light conditions. And the main ingredients of these solar cells might one day be extracted from plant material, perhaps even from garbage.
That's a really cool idea, though. I'm really impressed with this project. It's a phenomenal, when you read about what they're actually doing to create this material and the methodology, it's phenomenal. It's mind blowing, really. And, I have high hopes that this will pan out, because then you've reduced, once you ultimately solve those problems, the efficiency problem, you've ultimately reduced the cost of solar cells, because you don't have to worry about replacing them periodically. You put in some new fluid and it essentially has replaced itself.
And our last story here, Quantcast on Friday released data showing that Android stole significant market share from pretty much everyone in North America. Android now accounts for 25% of mobile web consumption. Apple's iOS fell to 56%. RIM's BlackBerry OS down to 9%. At the same time, Piper Jaffray is out there shouting from the rooftops that Android is eventually going to control half of the smartphone market because they just cannot be stopped.
A good free operating system is spreading like wild. I mean, that actually, if there was a licensing fees like slowing down the growth, I could see this being a real story. But this is seriously, it's on like 1,000 devices. Anyone can get it, and it's actually pretty stable now. I mean,
right? It's been free and stable for a couple of versions, why isn't it taking 50% of the market yet?
It takes time.
I think mainly it takes the right hardware, and it takes it being available on all the carriers. We have to remember that for a long time in the U.S., the only carrier that carried Android phones was T-Mobile. It took a while for it to move to the other carriers as well. But now that it's on the other carriers, it really is a no-brainer that Android is taking off, because as lovely as the iPhone is and as wonderful as people say it is, as much as they love it, it's only available on one carrier. And we have to remember that one carrier does not dominate the entire United States. In fact, it's not even the largest of the big four.
That's one carrier in the United States. It is on multiple carriers elsewhere. And there's still, this is Piper Jaffray numbers, is worldwide.
Oh, all right. We said North American earlier.
North America was that first stat. So, yeah, it's, mm-hmm. it's a good point to make clear. And what Piper Jaffray is saying is RIM and Nokia will embrace Android.
Well, you have to remember, you can't buy apps in most of the countries that you can get Android on right now. That's a big problem. You can actually, you know, that's one of the things I talked about a few weeks ago was that on the iPhone, you can buy the apps just about anywhere the iPhone is sold. But Android, the Android market isn't available everywhere where you can get an Android phone. So that might be one thing that's holding back that's been kind of a braking system on how fast Android can take off. I see it taking off, but I'm not really surprised that it's taking time to do so.
Plus, I mean, it's taken a while to figure out what kind of physical form factors Android runs on well. I mean, now it's moved to these 4.3-inch screens. Some of them have keyboards, some of them don't. You have a lot of options when it comes to this. I mean, it's taking... I remember the first, the G1, when that came out, more of a dev phone. You kind of get the concept. It does a touch screen and a keyboard, but you could decide what you wanted to do. So I think it took manufacturers a long time to figure out the form factor that would work. And now that they found out like almost anything, like now they're trying to put them on tablets and things like that, that's why it's really reaching this critical mass now.
And almost a side note, we should point out iPod Touch makes up nearly 40% of iOS sales, according to this Wired article. So when you look at these numbers, be careful to see whether, you know, like the first number we gave out for the North American market share, iOS number, that includes iPod Touch. When we're talking about sales and worldwide, like Piper Jaffray was talking about eventually, that only is iPhone. So, you know, these numbers can easily be fudged and spun.
So do you guys think that the iPod...
Spun fudge.
Lovely. Do you guys think the iPod Touch is going to take a chunk out of iPhone sales over the long term?
It is for me. I'm replacing my phone with one and a Wi-Fi.
You know, and I don't think Apple cares.
They even said it. They were like, it's an iPhone without the phone. No contract. I mean,
we don't have to deal with whiny AT&T. Yep. Fine with us.
There's a small difference.
So, yeah, that means that pretty much you would go with whomever you want for your phone. So even if you're an Android lover, you go and you get an Android phone, and then you go get an iPod Touch. You get practically everything that makes the iPhone so enticing without having to worry about a contract.
I have heard such things said by people I know. Like, you know what? I'm just going to get an iPod Touch because I want to have a Droid 2 or a Droid X or a Galaxy S.
It's probably doing some part to that lousy media player.
Or a Fascinate or a Captivate.
Oh, jeez. Not all the Samsung Galaxies.
All right. It is time for the News Fuse. Calls are beginning to come from within WikiLeaks. The calls are coming from inside the website. Actually, these calls are for Julian Assange to step down until accusations of rape are settled. Birgitta John's daughter, a WikiLeaks organizer and member of the Icelandic parliament, said she had asked Assange to step down until the criminal investigation is over, and she says she did not believe his claims of conspiracy.
Ex-HP CEO Mark Hurd has been named co-president at Oracle, reporting directly to Larry Ellison. HP has filed a lawsuit in the Superior Court of California claiming that Hurd had breached his contract. HP claims Hurd cannot perform his duties for Oracle without necessarily using and disclosing HP's trade secrets and confidential information to others.
Samsung announced the dual-core Orion application processor for mobile computers. The Orion features 1080p video encoding and decoding at 30 frames per second, embedded GPS, a native triple display controller, and on-chip HDMI 1.3a. You'll be able to drive two displays on your mobile device while feeding a third, which really just seems like overkill to me.
Why not? Well, I'm going to get those as new Amazon games and download them to my Android phone and then play them on a big screen while controlling them from my touchscreen.
Don't forget.
Incredibly efficient.
According to reports, Google is in talks with record labels to open a digital music store to allow its mobile users to play songs wherever they are. Google's plans also include a digital locker, which would allow users to download music once and play it on every device they own.
So just record labels? No.
So pretty much what MP3 Tunes got sued for doing about 4 years ago.
Cheap RAM is coming. Samsung Electronics, the world's top memory chip maker, I'm sure they wrote that themselves, warned of an oversupply in the computer memory chip market from the next quarter as a sputtering global economy may further weaken PC sales. Prices of DRAM widely used in computers have turned weaker since July after an unusually strong first half as PC demand growth lost momentum. So what's probably going to happen is they're probably hoping to drive a lot of sales to PCs because the RAM's cheap. Get a lot of RAM. You want 8? Get 16. Why not?
Okay. I'm going to read this copy straight because it's that darn good. In a clever game of cat and mouse, sure to win the hearts and minds of the world's citizens, the folks negotiating the secret ACTA treaty didn't make the most recent negotiations public. Instead, they let the latest version of the treaty, which aims to put DMCA-like laws in place in all countries, leak out onto the internet. Why bother?
Yeah, why bother making it public when it'll just leak out later anyway? Still don't believe in Duke Nukem after last week's announcement of a shipping version?
No.
No, I'm getting a lot of shaking no heads in here. Well, how about this? Gearbox honcho Randy Pitchford says it's important to release a demo, and now that the word is out, the studio can finally get on with making one. So now we can add a forthcoming demo to the things we still don't believe we'll ever see.
I'll play it on my white iPhone 4 that's on Verizon.
Nice,
okay, how about that? That's what I'll do.
I'll be there with you.
Sony has closed a loophole that allowed users to run software that enables pirated games to be played on the PS3 console. The update blocks the PS Jailbreak and PS Groove applications. PS Groove allows unsigned homebrew applications to run on the PS3 and can be modified to play backed up games from official PS3 discs. So the cat right now is ahead and the mice are regrouping. So just this will keep going, or just don't upgrade your PS3.
And finally, Tommy Christopher, who writes for Media8.com and is a White House correspondent, said that he has reporting so much in his blood that he had to live tweet his recent heart attack. His first post came while he was being rushed to the hospital in an ambulance. Quote, "I gotta be me, live tweeting my heart attack. Beat that."
Oh, if he's being himself, he's an idiot.
He went on to say, "This is not like the movies. Most deadpan heart attack ever." EVAR. "Still hurts even after the morphine."
Shouldn't this really hurt his reporting credibility at this point?
It hurt his heart.
Oh, did it?
Guy had a heart attack, Iaz. No
sympathy for this man. Have a...
This is obviously a mild heart attack. It's not the kind that knocks you out. But these are the kind that if you don't pay attention, they can kill you. Yeah. So it's a serious piece of business.
You don't have to tweet it, though.
Yeah, well,
why not?
You know what? I would criticize him, except for the fact that at Dragon Con, just after I had left to go and grab lunch on yesterday, in fact, I managed to cut my hand quite badly. And the first thing I did was I tweeted about it.
Sympathy
before
grabs.
You fixed it?
Yes. It was still unbandaged. That's what I'm saying. I'm not going to criticize this guy. I've done the same thing. Now, I don't think I would tweet and live stream someone breaking into my home, let's say.
You're no David Prager.
No, I am not.
I might live stream it. That's a good deterrent, actually, if they can figure out what's going on. But I think I understand what this guy is. He loves to report. He loves to talk. And that's what Twitter is about. Twitter is about publishing and talking and reporting what's going on live on the scene. And if he's laying there with nothing else to do but wait to get to the hospital, and he's not in extreme amounts of pain, it might be a good thing to, like, you know what? I'm just going to pick up on Twitter and say, like, dude, having a heart attack. How weird is that? I think I think what gives Iaz the reaction he's having and other people is the way he wrote it. Like,
oh, that also
hey, isn't
me.
This pretty awesome? Yeah. I'm having a heart attack.
Yeah, a heart attack is, I mean, it's some serious stuff. But also, I was just annoyed that as a reporter, he had just Evar. Gotta, G-O-T-T-A. I'm like, how could you possibly
you did
do
like
this?
A spelling?
Exactly.
The guy's having a heart attack.
No sympathy for the reporter having
did
a heart
he do,
attack.
Did he do LMHO, laughing my heart out?
He should have. I would have.
I think we've just coined something.
Okay, good.
And title.
All right, let's take a quick look at the calendar. Apple has started shipping new iPods this week. Folks are starting to get the emails, so we should be seeing some new iPod Nanos in people's hands by the end of the week. Yeah. Also, the Samsung Fascinate is launching September 9th for $199. You can start ordering it online on September 8th. So that's tomorrow if you want to get the final of the Samsung Galaxy S's. They'll now be one on all four major carriers here in the United States. And Twit is going to be at Dragon Con last weekend. The meetup will be last Saturday night, September 4th. No, I just want to say a big thank you to everybody who came out to the meetup or who came by our table and said hello. Huge thanks to Derek Colanduno for providing the table at Dragon Con at the last minute. Huge thanks to Brent and Lisa for making all of the streaming happen. We're going to have the parade special up in the Twit feed really soon, and we're working on the nightlife and daylife specials. They'll be in one like walkthrough episode of Dragon Con. It was a whole lot of fun. Great to meet folks and chat with them and see what's going on, and just a huge amount of fun to be there at Dragon Con. John Strickland was there, got to hang out with him. So you know, next year,
Iaz, come on down, Iaz.
Wasn't Atlanta?
It's in Atlanta.
Yes.
It's not far.
Okay. It's always in Atlanta.
No problem. I'll go there and then the Coke Factory.
And the twit table was really a who's who of podcasting there for a while.
Yeah, it wasn't the twit table at all, really. Yeah. I mean, it was just offered to us, and we kind of put the word out there to podcasters. And so we had Scam School, NSFW Show, Ladies of Leet, Coverville, Chuck Chat, just a ton of different podcasters all pooled in together, and we're, you know, giving away stickers and T-shirts, and we had Sword and Laser shirts on sale there, and it was a blast just sort of hanging out with Len Peralta from Jawbone Radio, and everybody was just sort of coming over and sharing tips and enjoying Dragon Con together. It was a good time.
Maybe next year.
You just watch the specials when they come out.
And that'll be available when?
Though the parade should be up today or tomorrow, and then the other one will come up right after that.
All right.
And then tell me you don't want to come. Okay, that's my
we'll
dare
see.
To you.
All right.
On to the emails, tnt@twit.tv. Got one here from Australia. This is Andy M., who says, at 3 p.m. Canberra time today, September 7th, the two major parties had 74 seats each in the House of Representatives of the Federal Parliament of Australia. The two remaining seats were in the hands of independents, Rob Oakeshott and Tony Windsor. These two had to effectively decide which of the two major parties they would support and thus determine the next government of Australia. They took 17 days, reviewed both parties' policies and costings, even getting professions at the Treasury to independently provide their assessment of both. Today, they announced their decision, Labour. The Labour Party gets their support, and both of them stated the main reason for their decision was the broadband network that the Labour Party wants to put into place. It's a fiber network covering the entire country, for the most part, wherever they can run fiber. There were some other reasons as well, like climate change, education, and health. However, on the main point of differences between the two parties was the approach to a national broadband network upgrade. The Liberals favored wireless, whereas Labour favored fiber to every house and fiber one. So there you have it. An IT issue decided a national election.
Pretty
congratulations,
cool.
Australia, on your new fiber network.
Yep. Excellent. George writes, hi, Tom, Sarah, et al. I don't know why you guys et al. With regards to the new Facebook account activity feature in Sarah Lane's session in Oakland, I noticed that the account activity feature showed my Facebook connections were from Cicero, Illinois. I don't live near Cicero, but apparently my ISP, AT&T UVerse, has a major network node in Cicero that connects to the internet. The IP address displayed is indeed the one currently assigned to me. So perhaps Sarah's ISP, or possibly the ISP of a favorite open Wi-Fi location, has a major node in Oakland?
Got a couple other people either called or wrote in about that. It could be an ISP location that Facebook is showing you. So it should be consistent if it's that and not somebody stealing it. Although I guess if someone steals consistently, it'd be hard to tell.
And lastly, we have an email from Brent. I get that there are a lot more Android users than WebOS users, but you might mention that Angry Birds came out on August 25th for WebOS. Also, the cards.
Hey, wait a minute. This guy wrote Buzz Out Loud, too. Same thing.
Hang on. Also
he is the WebOS Angry Birds
the
user.
The cards and unintrusive notifications make WebOS a wonderful gaming on phone and hopefully tablet experience. So how about a little love for WebOS?
Okay, Brent, is that enough? Like two major daily news podcasts have now read your email.
Next sign it, Brent from HP.
Do you not feel loved? Brent from HP.
Seriously, I mean, nobody loves the WebOS. I'm sorry.
All right.
Please do not write tech stuff.
What's your email address?
techstuff@howstuffworks.com.
Yeah, don't send an email techstuff@howstuffworks.com.
How does that WebOS work?
And meanwhile, John Strickland, thank you for being on the show and let people know other pertinent information to the Tech Stuff podcast.
Well, sure. My home website is howstuffworks.com, if you couldn't tell. The podcast is Tech Stuff. You can find us on Twitter. Our handle is TechStuffHSW. Same thing on Facebook. We have a group there at TechStuffHSW. And tag along. Check it out. We've got Tom and Veronica on an upcoming episode. And it was a really, really good recording, I think.
It was really fun to do it. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah.
Also, Ayaz Akhtar back on the show again. Does that mean you have a new podcast?
Yeah, every single time I'm here, I have a new show to promote. So first, I'll promote some of my lower third. This Old Nerd, it's about basically suburban tech. So you got a house or an apartment or something, you actually want to put tech in it. I'm going to show you how to actually wire your network because last time I was here on Skype, it failed. So I show people how to do it And so next, am I back on?
Yeah, you're right.
Thanks. Also, I'm going to be promoting thegmanshow.com. It's where the gadgets left off, effectively.
Oh, really?
They're gone. So we're...
That's a tall order, dude.
We're trying.
All right.
We're trying. We're snide and evil, and imagine us with no filter. So a lot, everything would be muted on this show.
All right.
So that's enough.
Skeptical.
We're trying. It'll be there. You should listen to it at thegmanshow.com.
TNT at twit.tv is our email address, 260-TNT-SHOW. If you would like to leave us a voicemail, please do. And you can also find us online, twit.tv/TNT. Thanks to Ayaz and John for being on the show. Becky's back tomorrow, we hope. We'll talk to you later.